From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, May 10th through Friday, May 14th, 2021. It was a week in which the key word in our crazy world has been vulnerability, as we begin to venture out of our caves without necessarily having to wear masks, and we assess the damage around us, both literally and figuratively. Society is coming to terms with just how vulnerable we are. Vulnerable to distorted information, vulnerable to random violence, vulnerable to invisible microscopic life forms, vulnerable to invasions of our privacy, vulnerable to the engines of industry and communication being shut down by hackers, both domestic and abroad, vulnerable to the outdatedness and incompetence of our most traditional institutions, vulnerable to our businesses being shut down, vulnerable to being canceled, and vulnerable to our own fears, anger, and willingness to believe our own lies. Stand by, as we're about to be joined by media thought leaders left, right, and center for a bold hour in which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. Please try not to get angry. Rather, listen to what's about to unfold with an appropriate degree of educated skepticism. We'll be joined by Michael Riedel in New York discussing the Liz Cheney affair and the future of the GOP. Is Donald Trump indeed running things? Steve Wiseman in Boston discussing the danger of malware and ransomware. Joey Hudson in Greenville, South Carolina, talking about the panic buying and hoarding of gasoline. Dr. Dahlia Wax in Las Vegas examining the fears many parents have about letting their kids receive the vaccine now that it's been cleared by the FDA for children as young as 12. And attorney Wayne Avrishow in Los Angeles talking about the status of the Gavin Newsom recall. Opinionated, articulate folks from all over the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation in a deafeningly noisy world in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap. This is our 106th consecutive episode, an examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information is gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, California politics and the Newsom recall tied with the Gates divorce and the Epstein connection. The recall of Gavin Newsom continues to move forward, but it still has a number of hurdles to clear as the exodus of people and businesses from the Golden State in search of greener pastures gains momentum. Interestingly, the slow process of the recall seems to be favoring Newsom, as the state is showing favorable numbers in terms of the pandemic and fiscal improvement.
Buzz continues to swirl around the announced divorce between Bill and Melinda Gates, with reports of the billionaire's ties to alleged sex crimes offender Jeffrey Epstein emerging in the press and potentially shedding light on the rift between the ultimate power couple. Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein reportedly engaged in meetings and other get-togethers going all the way back to 2013.
At number 9 this week, a tie between race relations, police reform, gun violence, and Golden Globe protests. The great reckoning between the races in America continues, and it connects directly with the ongoing debate over police reform and the mind-numbing regularity of random gun violence and killing across the nation. 9 people were wounded Thursday evening in Providence, Rhode Island, in what police say was the largest shooting in the state capitol's history.
The Hollywood Press Association, the organizing body behind the Golden Globes Awards, has been facing intense security over its alleged lack of diversity, with a growing number of actors such as Matt Damon, Scarlett Johansson, Mark Ruffalo, and Tom Cruise returning their awards in protest.
At number 8, immigration policy tied with the education crisis. The crisis along the southern border remains a huge problem for the Biden administration, but focus in the media and White House press briefings has been diverting attention away from the troubling situation in favor of vaccination progress and economic issues. Of course, there is a strong connection between immigration reform and all these other issues dominating the national conversation.
The crisis in education continues as parents, teachers, and students alike are looking forward to getting the show back on the road and students into the classrooms by this coming fall. The pandemic has exposed the flaws, outdatedness, and incompetence in a number of our society systems, and education is certainly among those at the top of the list.
At number 7, U.S. relations with China and Russia. Set against the backdrop of growing international unrest in all corners of the globe, the relationship between the United States and its two leading superpower antagonists continues to fester in distrust, accusations, and military preparedness.
Meantime, there's been no clear-cut policy on dealing with both China and Russia yet to be outlined by the Biden administration, which remains murky and ambiguous on the subject.
At number 6, the economy, job growth rate, employment issues, and inflation fears. By and large, the economy seems to be moving in a good direction as the nation optimistically looks toward a continuing recovery.
However, job growth this past April was far less than anticipated, and a debate rages over why some workers are choosing to stay home rather than go back to work, as employers complain that they have job openings but lots of trouble filling them. Has COVID-19 relief proven to be a disincentive toward productivity, and will the tremendous amount of money being thrown at our nation's problems by the federal government lead to uncontrollable inflation?
At number 5, the House Oversight Committee hearings on insurrection tied with the voting rights bill debate. Things grew quite heated and tempers flared at the House Oversight Committee hearings on the January 6 violence at the Capitol. Republicans sought to portray the Trump supporters who attacked the building as mostly peaceful patriots and downplay the violence of the day. Democrats, on the other hand, argued with Donald Trump's former Pentagon chief about the government's unprepared response to the riot that began when a mob of Trump loyalists, bent on overturning the election, broke through the police barriers, smashed windows, and invaded the building.
Meantime, another partisan battle looms as Senate Democrats have begun expressing doubts about pushing ahead with a vote on the sweeping voting rights and ethics bill that has become a top priority for progressives both inside and outside their party, at least without first making some changes. This doubt is spearheaded by influential West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, who says he won't back S1 as it currently is being presented.
At number 4 this week, Israeli-Palestinian violence. According to the New York Times, clashes between Arab and Jewish mobs on the streets of Israeli cities have given way to warnings from Israeli leaders that the decades-old conflict could be careening toward a civil war. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu described the scenes of arson and violence as anarchy and appealed to an end to lynchings.
Early Friday, Israel added ground forces to its assault on Gaza in an escalation of the violence. The situation in the Middle East is careening off in a very troubling and dangerous direction.
At number 3, the Colonial Pipeline hack. The hack of this major artery in America's energy system by a criminal organization, DarkSide, specializing in ransomware and causing a temporary shutdown of the flow of gas to the public, has exposed just how dangerously vulnerable the nation is to attacks on its grid.
It prompted waves of panic buying and hoarding of gasoline, not to mention sparking inflation fears, which is already an economic concern based on a wider array of economic factors. We have to come to grips with the reality that our growing dependence on computers and the digital operations of our major systems makes us extremely vulnerable to all sorts of attacks.
At number 2, the GOP versus Cheney, tied with the influence of Trump. The GOP's ousting of Congresswoman Liz Cheney, the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, from her leadership position among House Republicans in retaliation to her opposition to Trump and his legacy was the big political story of the week.
It illustrates how former President Donald Trump maintains a firm grip on controlling the direction of the Republican Party and the role he's carved out for himself as the party's kingmaker in advance of the 2022 midterm election.
And at number 1, COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy. variants, and stats. The focus of attention in the debate over vaccines has shifted to many parents expressing concern about the effect of giving shots to their children now that the FDA has approved vaccinations for children 12 years of age and older.
On the brighter side, a collective sigh of relief seems to be sweeping the nation as the CDC has significantly reduced the mask mandate for people who have already been vaccinated. All this is good, but until herd immunity is actually attained, with the existence of dangerous variants brewing around the world and vaccine hesitancy remaining a politically driven issue, we cannot say that we're quite out of the woods yet. We remain vulnerable to so many threats. It's no wonder many people are still afraid to leave the safety of their homes. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. There was a lot of politics in the national conversation this week, as is usually the case, with a tremendous amount of focus and attention paid to the ousting of Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney, the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, from her position as the third most powerful person among the GOP House leadership. Why'd they kick her to the side? Because of her stated opposition to former President Donald Trump, his policies, and his firm grip on influence within the party. Let's head to New York City now to discuss this situation with Michael Riedel, who co-hosts The Morning Show with Len Berman on WOR Radio. Michael, you're a conservative, and I remember you once said that you're like an Eisenhower conservative, and we know the conservative movement has certainly gone through many changes since those days, probably before you were born, to today in the post-Trump GOP. What's your opinion about what's been happening in Washington that's gotten so much attention with Liz Cheney being ousted from her position as one of the leadership in the GOP House because of her position contrary to the wishes and the policies and the positions of most of the Republicans today in terms of her withholding support and actually being quite critical of former President Trump?
Well, you know, Michael, to be honest with you, I'm conflicted about it because I am an old, George Bush Republican, an old country club Republican. But those old Republicans, and I think Liz Cheney represents that because her dad was Dick Cheney. They're the ones who got us into these wars that never ended. And I have to tell you, Michael, I would love to have voted for, Mitt Romney, because I was like the old rich Republicans. They play golf, they play tennis, they know what they're doing. Trump came along and he said, you know what, you Republicans, here's what you did. You got us involved in wars and you lied to us. You told us that there were weapons of mass destruction. You put Colin Powell in front of the United Nations to say that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And that was a lie. And that is why Republicans such as myself went to Donald Trump. I mean, if Liz Cheney thinks that she can bring the Republican Party back to a party of establishment, country club, rich people who can just lie to you, she is finished.
So is there a third option? Is the GOP at the, at the proverbial fork in the road, and the choices are follow the lies of the rich country clubbers or follow the lies of Donald Trump? Is that what it is? Or do you disagree that Donald Trump engages in lying just as badly or maybe worse as his predecessors who used to control the GOP?
You know, Trump can lie about the election, and I'm not going down that path because I think he's wrong about that. He lost fair and square, okay? But, his lies, whatever he's talking about with the election, is nothing like the lies that Dick Cheney told us that killed people, that killed Americans. Young men went to die for a war that was a lie. And that is why Republicans like me gravitated to Donald Trump. But I do think, as Republicans, we have to get past Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney, George Bush, Donald Trump. We have to find someone else who represents the values of the Republican Party and conservatism and capitalism, free markets, free people, make your own way in the world. And I do believe, Michael, in all honesty, I think Ron DeSantis is the guy, the governor of Florida. I think he's the guy who can get the Republican Party out of the morass that it's in. He figured out a way how to fight the virus, but also keep the economy opening at a time when I'm living up here in New York, where Governor Andrew Cuomo, a sexual harasser, okay, a horrible human being, was telling us, you cannot step foot outside of your apartment until I tell you to. Ron DeSantis figured out the way of how to get, let's fight the virus, but let's get the economy going at the same time. So my money is on Ron DeSantis.
That's Michael Riedel, co-host of The Morning Show on WOR in New York City. Coming up next, an in-depth look at the Colonial Pipeline hack and the serious dangers it signals to our society and security. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. One of the great bands of the golden age of album rock, Gun Hill Road, has been around for more than 50 years. The members of Gun Hill Road are Steve Goldrich, Paul Reich, Glenn Leopold, Brian Coonan, and yours truly, Michael Harrison. I wrote the lyrics to a song on our new album, What Year Is This? It's titled, I Know You're Real. It's about the relationship between human beings and our friends in the animal kingdom.
I know you're real.
Please take a moment to write down the following web address to see the music video of this inspirational song that contains some wonderful animal images that'll rock your heart and soothe your soul. Here's the address. Write it down. IKnowYouAreReal.com. That's IKnowYouAreReal.com. If you love animals, you'll feel real good after seeing this video. IKnowYouAreReal.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. One of the most talked about stories of the week, according to the Talker survey, is the Colonial Pipeline hack and the closure that stopped the flow of gas for several days, creating a panic buying situation and stoking the already growing fear of inflation. Joining us now is our legal correspondent and nationally acclaimed expert on cybercrime, Bentley University in Boston law professor, prolific author, and founder of the website scamaside.com, Steve Wiseman. I can't think of anybody better than you, Steve, to talk about the behind the scenes and underpinnings, the meaning of this whole Colonial Pipeline hack. What's going on?
This is, you know, it's, one of my mottos is things aren't as bad as you think. They are far worse. This one may be the epitome of it. And what's so interesting here is we've seen some of the disruption that it has been pretty substantial, and it's due to what has become the most common cybercrime in the world, which is ransomware. And ransomware has been around, it's been around since about 2008, got much worse in 2015, and since the pandemic, it has really come into its own. And here's how it works. There are these cyber criminal geniuses. They create this kind of malware. They get it downloaded onto, it can be a company, it can be a government agency, it can be a city's computers, whatever. Once it's in there, it decrypts, it encrypts all of the data in it. And what happens at that point is you're locked out. You can't use your computers. Recently in Germany, there was a ransomware attack against a hospital, and there have been a lot of ransomware attacks against hospitals and healthcare providers in the last couple of years. And what happened was a woman came there on an emergency basis, and she was turned away because they could not help her because they did not have any of their computers operating, and she died on the way to another hospital. So what occurs here is the bad guys are in this just for money. They're not looking to disrupt anything. They just want money, which is part of the problem. So when they encrypt the data, And then they say either you pay us a ransom, generally in some kind of cryptocurrency, within a few days, or we destroy all of your data. And this has led to businesses actually going out of business. Sometimes the criminals get the money and they don't even encrypt. Other times they get the money, but they still use further extortion to say we're going to make the information public. What was so interesting about this one is DarkSide. DarkSide is a sophisticated organization. It's a criminal organization, has its own website on the dark web where it brags about the victims it is attacked and even displays stolen data from more than 80 targeted companies that didn't pay the ransom. Also kind of interesting, they engage in public relations, regularly communicating with journalists, also saying that they give about 10% of what they steal to charities. So DarkSide, they were the ones behind this. They're getting the money. But here's where the big threat comes in. They're the kind of sophisticated malware that ransomware represents. Is only able to be created by a small number of cyber criminals. But their business model is they go on the dark web, that part of the internet where criminals buy and sell goods and services, and they actually lease out this sophisticated malware, this ransomware, along with tech support to less sophisticated criminals. So here's the problem. This kind of ransomware, and particularly where it now can attack even the systems themselves that are providing our electricity, our water, all kinds of elements of our infrastructure, you've got criminals who don't necessarily have to know a lot who can bring down a country. This is not an attack from Russia. This was not an attack from China or North Korea. These are just ordinary criminals. And the fact that these ordinary criminals can shut down pipelines, the electric grid, water supplies, even, which we're going to see an attack come, computers controlling Wall Street. This problem is huge. And unfortunately, what's happened is there have been attempts in Congress to try and put together some kind of laws and regulations for security that companies need to enact. And the lobbying from many corporations has been such that we don't have any of these laws. We don't have these regulations. The federal government gives recommendations to companies as to how they can protect their computers, but not enough companies have done so. And the fact is, if you have a business that is connected to the internet, and what business isn't, you are vulnerable to this kind of attack. So this presents a threat to our lives that is absolutely unprecedented.
Well, it's on a couple of levels. First of all, I would think the way to fix it is to have some type of an analog redundancy. We'd have to have everything built twice, one that's on the one that's electric and digital and wired, and the other that's old-fashioned.
And Michael, you are exactly right, because one of the things that we have said, those of us who work in cybersecurity, is that companies have got to back up everything, and you've got to back it up in multiple places.
Right.
You've got to back it up in the cloud, but you've also got to back it up in other places, even portable hard drives, such that even if there's an attack on the cloud, you're still going to be okay. So yes, you have to anticipate those kinds of threats.
Now, what about little guys? Like, you know, I run a small business. It's a trade publication. We have a radio show. Somebody like you, you know, you're teaching. You've had law practices in your life. Small business people, they're not really likely to be the direct target of a ransomware attack because, you know, they don't have that much money as these big companies. Eventually, it affects us as the Colonial Pipeline has proven to affect our economy and our bigger commonwealth. But in terms of running a small company, do you think this is something that somebody should walk around fearful of right now, that somebody's going to send them ransomware and charge them money to stay in business?
Yes, their pants should be damp at this point.
Oh, boy.
Because, in fact, initially, before they even started hitting these big companies, and, you know, we heard about this when the city of Atlanta and the city of Baltimore got hit and the Colonial Pipeline got hit. But, in fact, the most attacks have been against small businesses, and for a couple of reasons. One is it's very cost-effective for a criminal to make this attack. Very easy. And these small businesses, they're easy targets. They often do not have proper security. Now, you're not going to get the millions that you can get from a Colonial Pipeline, but you can crank these attacks out, and now that even lower-level cyber criminals can do them, they crank them out, and they are getting $50,000, $100,000. They're getting significant amounts. So, yes, in fact, small businesses, small to medium businesses have been and are likely to still be a primary target of this. They're not going to be newsworthy, but they are hugely vulnerable.
You said something earlier that's kind of provocative, that these criminals on the dark side, that they give a portion of their bounty to charity. But let's look at that carefully. How does a criminal organization give funds that were generated by crime to a charity?
How do you do charities that have said that they would not accept anything from them. So what they would do is they would probably be giving these anonymously. So they would funnel them through someone who appears to be a non-criminal entity, and they will make those donations. DarkSide says they give these to charities and substantial donations, but they don't indicate specifically which ones they give to. They also, on their website, specifically indicate, they said, we do not attack hospitals, schools, nonprofit. They even said they don't attack government agencies, which kind of makes sense when you don't want the government agencies coming after you. They focus their attention on corporations. They even put out a press release in the last week saying, hey, we are not any kind of governmental threat. We're not trying to disrupt you. We are just in it for the money.
So. We're not the government. We're the good guys.
Exactly. I mean, they really are interesting in that respect.
That's Bentley University in Boston law professor and founder of the website Scamicide.com, Steve Weissman. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's keep the conversation going now about the Colonial Pipeline issue. Joining us from Greenville, South Carolina, where he hosts the morning show on 94.5 The Answer, WGTK-FM, is our good friend Joey Hudson. So, Joey, you do the morning show every day in a part of the country emanating out of Greenville, South Carolina, on that big blowtorch at 94.5 on the FM dial, The Answer. I understand that in that part of the country, the Colonial Pipeline hack and shutdown has really created a bit of chaos. What's it like on the ground there?
Well, Michael, the Colonial Pipeline literally goes through my backyard. I cross over it daily as I'm traveling back and forth. And, it just sort of one of those overnight things that suddenly we're seeing very long lines at the few gas stations here in Greenville, South Carolina, that even have fuel. And so it was totally unexpected, and it's hit hard. It's hurt some of the service type industry, the lawn care guys out there who need to fuel every morning. But, I think a lot of it though, or what we're being told was the panic buying is what really pushed this across the line and made it, and turned it into a real problem because, I go by to fuel up the other day because I was right on empty. And the guy in front of me in his truck, he's got five or six containers, and we saw a lot of that. And, it's just really, it's just hard. Over us, I saw where Gas Buddies said the other day that 68% of stations in North Carolina, we reached the western North Carolina area, had no fuel at all. About 57% or so of South Carolina stations are out, and in that low 60 range of Georgia. So this hit our area pretty hard. We're hopeful that with the pipeline getting back up and running today, that things are going to turn pretty quickly. But they're still saying it'll be a few days, maybe even through the weekend, before we recover.
Well, at least the light at the end of the tunnel is apparent, because it's not a situation based upon some type of a inherent systemic weakness in the economy. You know, there's a specific reason for it, and there's a specific remedy. You know, many of us are old enough to remember the misery that was caused by the 1970s OPEC situation that led to the gas lines.
Oh, yeah.
That actually happened twice in the 70s, if you recall. It was not just one time. It came back. And I remember how absolutely difficult, for lack of a better word, it was difficult to make any plans, because you could wind up going. I lived in California at the time, and I remember I had to make a trip from Los Angeles to San Diego at night, and it took me hours to get ready for this hours long trip, just to make sure that I had enough fuel in the car, because once you're out there on the open road, you had no way to know if you'd ever make it back. And that was a terrible thing. This is sort of like a version of the toilet paper shortage that happened, which to this day, I can't fully wrap my brain around as to why toilet paper. There are explanations out there, but you pointed it out. It's panic buying, isn't it? It's really people
exactly.
Hoarding. And how were the vibes at the gas stations in terms of the lines? Are people irritable? Are they cutting in line? Are people going, hey, you're taking too much gas with those canisters in your truck? How's the vibe?
Well, there were a few instances of where people, you could tell that they were irritated with others because maybe they were buying a little more than what they considered was their fair share. But overall, and I've watched this very carefully, maybe I'm a geek, but I actually pulled into a station just the other day. Didn't need gas, but I wanted to watch people.
Hmm.
And it was pretty amazing to see how they, and it was no one from the station out there directing traffic or anything, which I thought maybe they should have had someone out there. But people, the goodness of people was coming through, and they just sort of helped one another. You know, you had people who, they literally, in this particular station, they probably had 15, 18 lines. One was open. And so some people, you know, their gas is on the right-hand side of the car or the left-hand side of the car, and they literally, you'd see someone stop the traffic so they could turn around to back up to the pump. But it was really surprising to see the goodness of people come out in a situation like this.
Because it could go either way, as we've learned from this whole pandemic. A crisis could bring out the best in people, and a crisis could bring out the worst in people. And you just reminded me of something. Another thing that I don't fully understand is, why can't the car manufacturers get it together in terms of having the gas cap on a standard side of the car? It's like,
you know. I know. If I'm driving my car, it's on one side, my wife's car is on the other, and
right.
I never can remember which.
That's it. That's Joey Hudson, host of The Morning Answer on WGTK-FM in Greenville, South Carolina. Coming up next, the latest nitty-gritty about COVID-19 from Dr. Dahlia Wax. She'll be discussing a huge issue regarding the concern that many parents have about their children being vaccinated now that the FDA approves vaccinations for kids 12 years old and up. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Some mistakes you just can't fix, like your retirement. You only get one chance, and with Grace Advisors, we'll help you make the most out of your one chance at a great retirement. At Grace Advisors, we make sure your retirement income is not at risk with the up and down ride of the stock market roller coaster. Instead, we build a foundation for your retirement, where when the market's up, you're up. When the market's down, you lose nothing, and we structure your plan in a way that you will save more on taxes, giving you an even greater return on your nest egg. So speak with the Grace Advisor, a Christian company, helping families protect their future every day. Call 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Call 888-585-1615 and speak to a Grace Advisor today. Or visit graceadvisors.com/radio.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. No matter how we slice it and dice it, the 800-pound gorilla of national talk show conversation is the COVID-19 pandemic. Here to fill us in on the latest is our medical correspondent, nationally syndicated talk show host, and highly respected physician, Dahlia Wax, MD. Vaccines for children. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's very exciting that they have now extended the vaccines to the 12 to 15 age group. So as we're trying to reach herd immunity, it's very difficult to do that without having the pediatric population protected. And as these variants do affect kids and younger individuals, it was a matter of time where we would have to start vaccinating our children. I understand there's some angst with parents. Parents might get the vaccine themselves, but with the new technology vaccine with their kids, some of them are hesitant. So fortunately for those under 12 years old, they're going to be even taking a little longer in terms of studying it to prove to parents that they did their due diligence and really looked at all possibilities and safety trials and long-term safety effects. So it's a good thing, but we understand that people are a little anxious about it.
Are there any indications that would tell the doctors that there's a significant chance that young people are becoming increasingly vulnerable to this? Or is this just some of those vague numbers that are really very small and ultimately insignificant?
Interestingly, so, you know, in the hospital setting, we are seeing younger individuals, especially obese. We have seen kids hospitalized, especially in Michigan, had reported higher numbers. So yes, there is some hard data. We don't want to scare parents. We don't want to scare kids, but it's a smart move to now start to, you know, address populations that are still vulnerable, like the pediatric population.
One of the things that people are talking about, and I know this is a little bit outside your area, but then again, when you're a doctor, nothing is outside your area. there seems to be, and this is not as big a topic, but it's in the conversation. People are talking about that there seems to be this national anxiety that people are messed up emotionally about this whole thing. Are you noticing it in terms of your conversations with people about health?
Yes, you know, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of distrust, and, you know, it stems from what really happened in China. You know, was there a lab leak? Was this a virus that was tinkered with? You know, are we getting the data from the government? You know, when we hear multiple people died of the vaccine and then we're told they're not vaccine related, is that true? So there's a lot of angst. There's a lot of distrust. Maybe it stems from the, you know, the voting issues and the election. Maybe it stems from Wuhan. But that is a growing trend. And we're seeing people fight. And then look at what happened with the pipeline. And I think masks, social distancing might have been great from a public health standpoint, but in terms of a people and a cohesiveness and a, you know, we're one country and we're in it, you know, for all of us, I think we're losing that by the day, and people are becoming more selfish and more individualistic and isolated.
And what are your thoughts in terms of that type of thing when it comes to the issue about the education crisis and sending kids and teachers back to school? That's another area of contention. And I think parents are concerned on one level. They want to get the kids out of the house. And there's talk about some of the kids having trauma, you know, being stuck with in-home learning, either from their parents or on Zoom. They want to be with their friends. But there's that lingering feeling that the schools may not be safe. What are your thoughts about that?
So, you know, when you see that, you know, schools that this virus can pervade schools, you do worry about, you know, kids' health. However, we've had multiple suicides in my neck of the woods from kids, you know, virtually, you know, forced to look at computers hours a day. We're seeing depression. We're seeing sleep disorders, eating disorders, kids not getting vaccinated. And we're starting to see all sorts of other public health issues that at some point, if we have to decide we're going to live with this virus, like we live with flu, like we live with other colds, then we're going to have to go back to normalcy and then just kind of take the risks as they come. But I'm definitely a proponent of getting kids back to school because the kids just weren't convinced that they had to be home for 15 months. And I don't think we're going to convince them that they need to be home longer.
What's the dominant topic and what's the dominant prevailing point of view or points of view on your daily radio show? I mean, here you are a medical doctor. You do a daily show. You're heard on news talk stations. So you're in an environment where people tune to the radio for politics and for public policy. Your show is extremely successful and it's growing leaps and bounds. So obviously you're doing something right. How do you handle the... first of all, is all of the health stuff that you talk about COVID-19, how do you deal with callers and just your own position, the intense political sensitivities that come with this topic?
Absolutely. You know, you have some people who were just devastated from the pandemic because they lost somebody. You had other people that were devastated because they lost their careers. They lost their restaurant they had taken decades to build. You have kids that lost their chance at prom and graduation. And so everybody lost something. And whenever you lose something, there's the blame game. And in psychology, people will blame, whether it's their public official, whether it's the president, whether it's the media. And so what I'm picking up on is a lot of animosity, a lot of, you know, blame, and a huge topic is people going back to work. Some people, they feel like, you know what, 15 months being off the job, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could go back to a toxic work environment or an employer who's on my case when I got to be home. Or you have employers going, look, we got people now flirting with each other, you know, sleeping with each other on the job. It's like Caligula after being home for 15 months. So right. I'm seeing a lot of the topics now are shifting to the workforce and how to prevent another lockdown if the government decides to do that in the fall. And so I think a lot of people are now starting to look more at the economic aspect of it because they want to know that if they're able to open up, they can build. People need to know they get to build, and people don't want to think that there's a closed tunnel. They always want to think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And so will there be hope? And we don't know. We don't know if we're going to have to lock down again. We don't know what's going to happen with the variants. So I think there's a lot of angst, and yes, it is politically related because people will blame their public officials depending on what side of the aisle they were on and what brunt of, you know, some of the casualties they felt during this pandemic.
And a lot of times I'm hearing now people talking about we've got to learn from this to avoid another pandemic. I mean, there's nothing written in stone that these pandemics happen every 100 years since the last one of mm-hmm. this magnitude was 100 years ago. I mean, is it possible that something else could pop up on us like in 10 months or 10 years?
Absolutely. Huh. Yeah, no, you bring up a good point. You know, these things don't have to happen once every 100 years. And if it does, you know, if the evidence does show that this was a virus that might have been tinkered with and inadvertently leaked, there's no way the Wuhan lab is the only one that's doing this. And so I think this has opened up our vulnerability. We have vulnerability to hackers with the pipeline or a vulnerability to our electric grids in Houston. We have vulnerabilities to labs experimenting on pathogens. And so I think a lot of us in the medical field feel that the next one is going to come sooner than we think.
And in conclusion, you know, we talk about all the other things back to the mental health situation and the word vulnerability. It seems that the world is brewing with anxiety, violence, tension, potential war. Look what's going on in Israel and the Palestinians. Look what's going on in the border between Russia and Ukraine. Look at what's going on at the difficulty of the Iran peace talks. Look at what's going on at heightened tensions with China and Russia. This is a crazy time, and that does take its toll on people's health, doesn't it?
Exactly. You know, one issue is, you know, the term when you have nothing to lose. A lot of people out there feel they have nothing to lose. They lost family members, they lost their jobs, they lost their savings. And so rather than, you know, playing it safe and playing it nice because they want to keep what they have, for many people out there that lost everything, they're not going to, you know, sit quiet. And so I think we are seeing, you know, people that feel like they have nothing to lose, so why not be able to speak out? And when you confine people for so long, they want to feel liberated. So on top of that, they're going to be less likely to keep things confined. And so, yeah, I think that all plays in all together.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic in terms of your own personal view of the situation?
I'm optimistic in that we were able to do some real amazing things. Kudos to the Biden and Trump administration on getting the vaccine out. Kudos on the health departments getting the vaccine rollout. But we still have, I'm very pessimistic on the transparency and on what could happen next, because I feel like we're not being given the true story. And I think things have been kept from us. And I think certain narratives have been pushed for people's agendas, that when we do have another public crisis and you ask people to mask up, I think they're going to be so fatigued by the whole topic and they're going to say, no, you know what are you going to do? Take my business away? You've done that already. So I'm optimistic and pessimistic on both fronts.
That's Dr. Dahlia Wax of the Genesis Communications Network discussing the latest on COVID-19, the number one topic of conversation this past week, according to Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Okay, we have time for one more. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of discussion this past week about California, its politics and its economy. Why are so many people and businesses moving out of the Golden State in search of greener pastures? And why is the state's governor, Gavin Newsom, facing a potential recall at the hands of disgruntled voters? Joining us is one of the most connected people in California politics. He's a lawyer, a political strategist, a pundit, and a true LA political insider. He's written numerous commentaries for Real Clear Politics, as well as a number of other publications. He's even written a current best-selling novel, a real political thriller titled Center Stage, about a rock star who runs for president. Our guest is Wayne Avershow. What should people around the nation who follow politics really know about what's going on with Governor Gavin Newsom?
Well, the Newsom recall has qualified for the ballot. It has not been announced when the election will be held. Most people believe it's October, November. That's the timing. But timing is everything in politics. And Gavin Newsom is fortunate. If this recall election had happened 6 months ago, if it happened in November of 2020, he'd be in trouble. But the cases of COVID have declined. Unemployment is declining. Employment's coming back somewhat. Plus, just the other day, the state announced a $75 billion surplus. So
the numbers are in his favor at this point.
The numbers are in his favor economically, vaccine-wise, and $75 billion to distribute and curry favor with.
I know that back when Gray Davis faced a similar situation, and talk radio was so involved in the Gray Davis recall, and I knew Gray Davis personally years ago when I was a broadcaster in L.A., when he was a young aide to Jerry Brown. So I followed his career, and it was fascinating. One of the things that brought him down, although there was a giant field of candidates, was the fact that a formidable candidate such as Arnold Schwarzenegger was in the pack. Doesn't seem to be the case with Gavin Newsom. Caitlyn Jenner doesn't seem, from my perspective, to have much traction. She didn't do that well on some of the interviews that she gave on national TV. What's the view of Caitlyn Jenner as a high-profile candidate to replace Gavin Newsom?
Well, I think you nailed it. In 2003, with the recall of Gray Davis, the state was struggling. The state had a budget deficit. Now it has a surplus. But also, Caitlyn Jenner is no Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold, and I went to an event for Arnold. It was bedlam. Arnold fired up a crowd, honestly, like I've been in politics for 40 years. I don't think I've ever seen anybody fire up a crowd like Arnold. Caitlin is far from that.
Yeah. So I heard it said that the Newsom team is kind of happy that Caitlyn Jenner is the highest profile candidate currently, at least from a national perspective, running against him or running for that position, if in fact he is recalled, which in fact is still it's not a fait accompli. That's political commentator Wayne Avershow of Real Clear Politics. He's an attorney and political observer. His new novel, Center Stage, a political thriller, is available at Amazon.com. And that concludes this latest installment of our show. This has been the Michael Harrison Wrap, looking back at this past week of Monday, May 10th through Friday, May 14th, 2021. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor. That unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And that does it for this week's installment of The Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.